Welcome back to the MetaMinds podcast, where we help you master your mindset. My name's Dan. I'm a fully qualified counselor.
And my name's Amy, and I run a video production business.
And on today's episode, we had Glenn Azar with us. He runs the Building a Better Human project. He also runs an adventure business. He's dabbled in lots of other businesses and different adventures throughout his life. He had a really fascinating story. There was so much gold in this episode about mindset and growth and business.
Yeah, so I don't like discounting people, but this is probably our most exciting guest today. We learned a lot. There's a lot of wisdom in this. He tells a bit of his story about how he came to like where he is, which is he's in a phenomenal place in his business and his life. His mindset, it really is optimized, and there's a lot of gold in kind of how to shape your attitude in life.
Yeah, you know, I think definitely.
So yeah, I kind of remember it was like literally just
there
then.
Was so much. Yeah, but there was a lot about like how to optimize your mindset, and we spoke about self-doubt as well and how we combat self-doubt, spoke about the idea of running a business for 10 years and then becoming an overnight success in other people's eyes. But the reality is you put in 10 years of hard work.
Come on, Dan, let's not give it all away.
Sorry.
So yeah, kicks off talking about his podcast and how he uses that as a marketing technique. But yeah, there's heaps of gold in there. Be sure to check it out. Leave us a rating on iTunes if you haven't already, and we will see you in the next episode. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Glenn.
Welcome.
And I guess we'll start off with the Building Better Humans project.
Yes.
So I've seen it's also been kind of a movement as well. Like a lot of people are kind of embracing this way of being. And you've nearly hit 400 episodes now from what I saw. So like, how did this all start? Like, when did you start actually creating the podcast, and what reason behind having a podcast did you have?
So I started the podcast, February is our fifth year, start of our fifth year.
Yeah.
So I kind of started it before podcasts were really a thing in Australia, which is interesting. And I was just saying before we started recording that I went to, I was working at Nova radio station, as in I was renting space out of there, because the general manager at the time was a mate of mine. And I went to him and said, I want to start a podcast. Do you know anything about it? He said, no. So I went to one of the sound producers, a good mate of mine, and said, do you know anything about it? He said, no. He said, but I can produce your audio, but what you do with it after that, I don't know. I spoke to my web guy, a guy from Newcastle called Dan Borg. I said, mate, do you know anything about it? He said, no. So between us, we worked it out. And the only reason I did it was I was listening to a podcast, and this guy was saying, this is how easy it is to start a podcast. And I thought, I meet lots of interesting people. And so I just started from there. I called it the Building Better Humans project. We literally got no listens in the early stage. I didn't care. I was just enjoying it. I wanted to use it to brand myself so people understood who I am as a person, because my main line of work once I got out of the army was to run an adventure business. And I didn't have the marketing budget of other adventure businesses, so I wanted people to understand that I believed adventure is the best personal development in the world. So rather than just going and trekking Kokoda, it's who you become in that process of trekking Kokoda. That's what I wanted to try and sell. So that started to give people an idea of what my personality was. If they didn't like me, they won't contact me, and that's okay. If they did like me, they will. And that was really the purpose behind it initially. Plus, I've met lots of interesting people. I didn't want to interview anyone famous. And I didn't want to chase all your standard interviews. I wanted people that you've never heard of that have got bloody amazing stories. And so we just did it. I thought I'd do 20 episodes. And I got addicted to it. I don't know if you boys are the same, but I actually enjoy the process. I enjoy recording them. At the moment, last year I was doing 4 episodes a week. I'm probably going to tone that back a little bit this year.
Yeah.
People getting sick of just like deleting half of it.
I don't know. Like the numbers are still good. I get
yeah.
People who contact me regularly and say, I've just started listening to, I've just stumbled across this show and I really love it. And, you know, I'm going back through the back episodes now and I think, well, good luck, because there's like 400 of them. But some are really short.
That's what I was going to ask about. Because I've noticed there have been a bit of variety in the length of them. So was that a conscious decision to make bite size and then longer form content as well?
So I started with just interviewing people. Then I started doing what I called the midweek motivation, which was just me having my own opinion on the world. Because that was a suggestion from a mate of mine who's been podcasting for a long time. He said, you need to put more of yourself into it. And I coach people outside of my adventure business. And then those became more popular. And I think it's people a lot of people talk about Joe Rogan, massive podcast, does millions of downloads. I personally struggle to listen to him because it's 3.5 hours and I don't have 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And if you go on YouTube and Facebook, he does bite-sized chunks of the good bits anyway. So that are 10 minutes long. So I'll listen to those rather than listen to his 3.5 hours because there's a lot of bro chat in there.
Yeah, so much.
So I started realizing that I know when I get in a car, like I'll pick up, you know, when I started chatting to you guys, I started listening to your show, so I get an idea what it's about. And I see the episode says 23 minutes. Cool, I got time for that wherever I'm driving, so I put it on. I don't want to listen to a 45-minute podcast if I'm in the car for 10 minutes because I hate having to turn it off, turn it back on
and then like, pick where up where I live.
So then I just started doing short form, and as far as the numbers go, they're way higher than the long form. So not that my long form's that long, an hour. So I did a really long one with Mark Donaldson, the Victoria Cross recipient, ex-SAS Young Australian of the Year, that went for 2.5 hours. Oh. But you literally couldn't edit that guy. He was too interesting.
Yeah, true.
And it's not every day you sit with someone of that level. And he's got a really interesting story. His mum was murdered when he was a young fella, brought up his younger brother on his own, was a bit of a rogue, got involved in drugs, ends up joining the army, goes to SAS, wins the Victoria Cross. He's a phenomenal human.
Wow, so you downloaded that one. You couldn't really not.
Yeah, there's no way I was going to stop him talking.
Yeah, let's cut it off there, halfway through the story. So to go back to something you said before, you said adventure is the best self-development tool in the world, or something along those lines.
Best personal development tool. Yeah, that's my belief.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Mm. And I did an 8-day hike in Switzerland like 2 months ago, and I kind of came to that conclusion without like those particular words. So I think it was really fascinating. Like, how did you come to that kind of conclusion?
There's a lot of things, I guess. So I... there's probably two sides to that. There's one, my daughter did the Kokoda track. I've got four children, but only one of them's into adventure. She did the Kokoda track when she was 8 years old. I was still in the army, so I was kind of a nature over nurture guy. And she wanted to do Kokoda. She was the youngest person to do it at the time. She went on to travel all around the world, and at 19 years of age, she became the youngest Australian to summit Mount Everest. So I watched her start training for that 15 to 19, and who she was at the start of that journey to the person that's still on the top of Mount Everest are two different people.
Mm.
And she actually said to me once that I knew I had to be better to be the person who could do this. The 15-year-old version of me, forget age, any version of us that wants to climb Mount Everest, who we are now isn't good enough. I had to go and collect the skills and the mindset and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, well, that's the same for everyone. I do about 9 Kokoda tracks a year. I go to Mount Kilimanjaro every year. I go to Russia every year and climb a mountain over there. And each time you're seeing people pushed outside their comfort zone in countries they don't know, and who they are at the start and who they are at the end are two totally different people. And one thing the world can never take off you, no matter what, you can lose money, you can lose family, you can lose everything, but you can never lose experiences. Mm. They're locked in there forever. So you build a resilience through putting yourself in situations that require you to have resilience. Too often in this day and age, we want to be comfortable, we want to be safe, and therefore when life hits you in the guts, and it will, you don't have the resilience because you've never built that up. Mm. And I guess I was taught that through 17 years in the army, and I just didn't realise it until I got out and started to see normal people, civilians, who were living in this little comfort bubble, and then when life punches them in the guts, they don't know how to respond.
Yeah.
That's been my experience. I don't know if that's true, but that's certainly been my experience.
Mm. Yeah, interesting.
It's just getting like easier and easier as well, and it's like, because that's what, you know, people buy things that are comfortable kind of thing. Like, that's how marketing is done kind of thing.
So yeah, I love all that stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, for sure. But it's like you have to learn to limit that for yourself so that you can actually, like, achieve things. Otherwise, you're just watching Netflix all the time.
The other problem I see is we're in a really well-connected world. And I love social media and all that sort of stuff for the positives of it. I'm not someone that hates that stuff.
Yeah.
But we're so connected, but we're not really connected.
Yeah.
You know, how often do you sit down and have conversations with someone you've never spoken to before?
Mm.
And if you two boys come to Kokoda, there'll be 10 other people on that trip you've never met. Your phone doesn't work over there. Mm. You've actually got to have conversations with people. We don't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
So that creates this whole different experience where I've got a farmer from Perth and a firefighter from North Queensland and, you know, a former soldier from Sydney, or all these people interacting with each other that would literally never cross paths.
Mm.
And so you learn more about the world because you're challenging your belief system.
Yeah, definitely.
That's personal development.
And you make lifelong friends as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the different experiences that I've had that have been somewhat challenging and then like with someone that you never really met before as well. And it's like you still message them like all the time, like, what are you doing now?
And,
you
know, shared hardship. You do Kokoda today and someone did it 5 years ago and you can still have it, even though you weren't on the trip together, you can talk about the same experiences.
Absolutely.
It's the same in the army. Guys that went through recruit training, guys and girls, and then 10 years later and 20 years later, you can be chatting to someone who's just been through and there'll be similarities.
Mm.
You know, people got the similar stories. It's shared hardship. That's what bonded us as soldiers, and it bonds normal people as well.
So you do some pretty gnarly things, like you do all these different hikes all around the world every single year. Are there any things in your day-to-day life that you do to challenge yourself, like, because obviously, you know, if you're doing them so often, like they're like a little bit easier kind of thing. So is there anything that you do in your day-to-day life that you challenge yourself to keep you?
Yeah, look, interesting question. I'm so busy at the moment that I barely find time. And you're right. So people say, well, Kokoda's life-changing for them, but I'll do 9 of them a year. And that's not to discount it.
Of course
not. It's just that I'm constantly doing it. So the high I get from that is the people I hang around, because it's a different group of people all the time, my connection with the locals in the country, but I don't find it hard. And it's not to say there aren't hard days or you don't feel 100% all the time, but it's not physically demanding for me. And 17 years in the army carrying a backpack, that's literally my skill, walk around the backpack on. So so I'm not challenged by that. We own a gym, which we only opened this year in Newstead in Brisbane. So I'm training every day. I'm not an athlete, but I train every day. I public speak a lot. One of people's biggest fears, public speaking. I do that a lot, so that doesn't worry me.
Yep.
So I'm not challenged by any of those sort of things. But what I am challenged with is creating work-life balance, if there's such a thing. Harmony is probably a better word, because I love what I do, so I do it as often as I can, and there's no one to pull me up on that. But then I look back and I goal set a lot, and I think, well, I've talked about for years some real basic stuff. Learn to play a guitar. I'm not musical at all, and I know it'd be so hard for me to pick that skill up that it would be a form of mindfulness. So that would be something I'd like to learn. I've always talked about learning to surf and all these things that I've talked about but I haven't done, because I literally spend 6 months of the year or more out of the country, and then I've got 4 children, so the rest of the time I'm doing stuff with the kids. From my youngest daughter's 12 and my oldest daughter's 24, and you know, I've got 2 in between. So there's, I don't know, it's really hard to find something that makes me uncomfortable.
Sounds like learning is one of them.
Though. Yeah,
yeah, just fitting stuff in at the moment. And that's because our business in the last 2 years has just exploded, our adventure business. Now it's 10 years old in February. And that's the way the world works. You spend 10 years to become an overnight success. So we're kind of on that journey now where the business has grown to a point where we've got to take our hands off it a bit. We've got really, really good people around us, but it's about teaching our clients that these are really good people you can trust as much as you can trust us. And that's happening, but I think that's going to be another 12 to 18 month process. We had planned, my daughter and I, to take 2021 off and go and do this epic adventure all around the world. And the truth is that's probably going to be 2022 now.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, business is business.
Yeah.
People want to work with you. You've got to say yes. That's how you put food on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then like the interesting thing is, obviously, you're very competent and confident in what you're doing. But the thing that I'm really curious about is like the mindset as to how to continue doing what you're doing, right? Like, does self-doubt ever creep in for you? And if it does, like, how do you combat that?
Well, it's interesting because on the drive here, I was listening to one of your episodes on imposter syndrome.
Yes.
And which is it's something everyone has. I'm incredibly confident, but it doesn't mean you don't have it. I remember sitting down in 2015, I took Channel 7 to do a documentary on Kokoda. I took Ash Kip and Lutzi from Nova radio station, plus half of Nova, and I had to sit in a room with about 20 people, executives, cameramen, all the decision makers from Channel 7, and they wanted a rundown of the whole trip from start to finish. At that stage, I'd done about 50 Kokodas, so I'd been there a bit, so I knew it inside out, but they would just hit me with all these questions. I had all the answers, and I went home, it was fine. And they went, oh, this is amazing. I'd go to bed and I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought, I can't run this trip. Like, who am I to run this trip? Because they had such in-depth questions. Their legal departments were there. It was really intense. And yet I've done 50 Kokodas. There's no one better to do this than me. Like, I know that in my heart and I know that in my head, but there was still that piece of me that thought, I'm out of my depth here because there was so much pressure on. And how I get over that stuff is I'm a massive believer in action. Just get up and start doing something. So if I wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning feeling that way, I'll get up and I'll start writing emails. I'll start working on stuff. When my brain's activating and doing stuff, it gives me the calm and confidence to go, you do actually know. Like now I've done 79 Kokodas. So we're talking a long time ago, I guess, in a way. But I don't know any more at 79 than I knew at 50. That's still a lot of Kokodas. But it was probably the first time I'd ran a massive corporate trip where all the pressure was on me. So, yeah, you definitely get it. Yeah. I don't get it a lot, but you do get it.
Yeah, true. And it's interesting because that resonates with me, like the idea of just actioning it, because I feel in myself as well, like when I'm stagnant and when I'm sitting not trying to achieve something or not trying to better myself, that's when more self-doubt will creep in and it will attach my ego and I'll kind of go, yeah, true. Like, I'll just have a break. I'll just stop doing it. But when I'm actioning it, I'm like, no, I can do this. And it kind of builds that confidence.
I think I read somewhere along the lines that the easiest way to be depressed is to sit and spend, you know, it said 30 days, but I'm sure it doesn't have to be that long, but just locked away by yourself thinking about yourself because all your doubts just start to grow. So the best thing you can do is get out and interact with other people first and foremost. We're also fortunate, and I say fortunate in that my son, who turned 16 in February, he's autistic and he's intellectually impaired. So he's mentally between the age of 5 and 6. So he goes to a full special school. He's doing grade 1 maths. He's just moved to grade 1 English after 10 years at school. And that's been a big driver for our family to go, well, he doesn't have the opportunities we have. So that can be a bit of a kick in the ass to myself when you doubt yourself, because you go, well, he's not going to have the opportunities you've got. You owe it to him to live your fullest life. I've always said that to my girls, to my 3 daughters. That's been a massive driver for us when you have a challenge like that. And then I drop him at a school where there's 130 kids and he's one of the better ones. There are kids there that are fully disabled, in wheelchairs, can't speak. They've done nothing wrong. They were just born that way. So then able-bodied people with neurotypical, as we call them, who complain about life or who think they can't do something, they need to kick up the butt.
Mm.
And to be honest, it took my son, Christian, his name is, it took Christian to teach me that lesson. A lot of the time, he constantly grounds and humbles us as a family. So, because he's going through puberty with the brain of a 5-year-old, that's really tough.
Yeah.
And it certainly wakes you up to, you know, you think, being a soldier and I've boxed professionally and I've done it, I thought I was tough till I had him. Yeah. Then you realize you're actually not. There's layers to life, you know.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely is layers. Yeah. To switch gears a little bit, like obviously going from the army to starting a business which has become quite successful, that's quite a different kind of life change. Like, what has been the biggest challenge in business for yourself, would you say?
The biggest challenge is that I knew nothing about money, about tax, about anything. Because when you're in the army does everything for you. If the army asks you to do a job, particularly when you get into command roles, they give you a mission, you say, well, I need to requisition these stores, these vehicles, and this much manpower. They'll either give it to you or they won't. The mission won't change. If they've got it, they'll give it to you. If they haven't, they might give you half and you still go and do the mission. But you don't put a cost to that. When I got out and started running a business, well, one, I invested a whole chunk of money into another business first, and I only owned 15%, and that was in 2008. I put the money in. I got out of the army in 2009, and the global financial crisis hit in 2010, and we lost the lot.
Oh.
Back to zero.
Yeah, yeah.
That created a huge strain. I went through a divorce as a result of that directly, because financial strain and that sort of stress, and I didn't know how to cope with that stuff back then.
Yeah.
That just puts stress on everything, and that started my professional development, my personal development journey. And then I had to learn about business from there, because the tax department, the ATO, is brutal when it comes to small business. They don't really care that much. If you're a big company like a Holden, they'll give you $500 million to try and pull you out of trouble.
Mm.
But if you've got 2 or 3 operators and you owe them $70,000, they'll shut you down. That's the reality of business. And I had to learn that. I had to learn that you live or die by your own sword. So the feedback in a business is fairly immediate. You're either good enough or you're not. There's no one to complain to. There's no one to whinge about how many hours you're doing. But what I've learned is everything that I've been through, I've chosen. Like, I chose to start a business. I didn't have to. Mm. I could go and get a normal job. Maybe not now, because I don't have a skill set for a normal job.
Yeah, I have to relearn it again.
Yeah, but back then, I could, like, I was a registered nurse. I could have went out. I'm not registered anymore, but I could have went out and worked in a hospital.
Yeah.
That's safe. There's plenty of work out there for nurses. The healthcare system's not going anywhere.
Mm.
We've got an aging population, but that wasn't for me. And I've spent 17 years where everyone was my boss, and that's the military. And now coming up to 10 years in February where I've never been paid a wage that I haven't earned myself, that's quite an empowering feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not easy, but it's doable.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned just before that it's taken nearly 10 years to get to that point that you are seen as an overnight success.
Yeah.
So obviously there were moments throughout there where you had to overcome adversity as well. Like, you mentioned the financial side of it. But what about, like, creating the actual brand and the image and where you were actually going to go with the business, like the adventure business? Was that always in mind early on?
No.
Or changed, did it? Yeah.
I'd love to say that where we are now, which is phenomenal, and we're kind of the leaders in Australia in what we do, and people constantly come to us for advice. And I'd love to say I planned that, but most of it was accidental. I'm a massive action taker, and I'll take opportunities when they come along. And I think opportunities pass us by all the time that we're not aware of. because we're too busy, you know, fearful of, you know, whether it's imposter syndrome or not good enough, or I'm not quite ready yet, so I wait until I'm ready. I take action and then try and work out how to be ready on the way. So people who work with me who suffer anxiety struggle, because I'll just come in and go, right, we're doing this. And I go, well, how are we doing? Well, let's work it out, like, because I've already said yes. And so that's been one part of it. But I just fell into all of this stuff accidentally. I got called once when I was in the army. I'm an aviation qualified medic, so I'm a helicopter evacuation specialist. These guys are taking the Westpac head crew away to Kokoda when no one's really doing Kokoda. New Guinea was considered to be quite scary. They got, these guys are earning multi-millions of dollars, so there are a lot of equity for the bank. So they wanted extra safety measures. They rang the army and said, we're looking for an aviation specialist. My boss said, yeah, you can go. That's how it started. And I thought, people actually do this for a living? No one really did back then, but I thought maybe it was possible. The first Kokoda trip I ran on my own in 2010 had four people. I lost about $6,000.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
So there's your first wake-up call. Yeah. But I'd said yes to the people who were going, and I was never going to pull out of that trip. And my mindset was, all right, we're losing money, but let's get some photos. And, you know, this was back in the days where you couldn't take photos on phones. So digital cameras, get some collateral so that I can go and do talks. For the next 2 years, every time I did a talk on Kokoda, there was only four people taken in various different angles so that you couldn't tell it was always the same four people. That's all.
Right.
These days, we've taken thousands of people across the track. So it grew accidentally. And I don't know if you've ever heard the quote that Steve Jobs once said, that you can't connect the dots in life going forward. You can only connect them going backwards. And what he meant by that was he got sacked by Apple, the very company that he started. He got paid out well, so it wasn't like he was poor, but he was upset because it was his company.
Yeah, sure.
So then he went away and he invested in two other companies. I can't remember one of them, but one was Pixar. And he's not a creative as such. And he said what he realized in hindsight is through the creatives of Pixar, that's without them, the iPhone never would have existed, because they made him think outside the box creatively. So then when he wanted the iPhone, first thing he wanted to do was hold music. That's really all he wanted it to do. But he got these creative people in to say, well, what's it going to look like? What's the user experience going to be like? Now, had they not sacked him, Apple still would have moved along, but he felt it probably would have just stayed a computer company. They wouldn't have got into all the other stuff. And so whilst he got annoyed at that initial decision, it ended up being the right decision. Mine was kind of the same. I started in the army as an infantry soldier, which is what most people would think of a soldier. A gunfighter. I broke my leg. They forced me to become a medic. I hated it because I wanted to be a gunfighter. And it turned out to be the best thing. My career was longer. I ended up falling into a Kokoda trip years later. And long story short, I ended up running an adventure business that we run now, where we're in demand, where my daughters had the opportunity to go and climb mountains and do things because of what we do. Good sponsorships, good speaking opportunities. We coach teams and businesses around teamwork and leadership that we learned in the army, and also experiences we've had on Kokoda, then often they'll go out and actually do that with us. So there's all these facets to our businesses. And this is where Building Better Humans came from. This mate of mine said to me once, you do a bit of coaching and you own a gym and you've got an adventure business and you're all over the place. And I thought, yeah, I am. And then I thought, actually, no, I'm not, because everything we do is about building better humans.
Mm.
It's about making people fitter and stronger mentally, health, emotionally, physically, in every way possible. That's what we do. We literally build better humans, and that's what it became.
Yeah, so, wow.
And it just started. And I coined that phrase accidentally at a meeting I had with a big company in Sydney. So this mate of mine got me in, and I had to sit down with the CEO of a company that was far too big for me to be pitching at. But
I your actions got you there.
There you go, yeah.
And we were talking, this guy was kind of a bit standoffish, and that one thing I just said to him is, at the end of the day, it's about building better humans, not just making your team better as team members at work. You've got to think about them as holistic humans, their home life and everything else. So I'm just about building better humans. When I left, my mate messaged me, so I don't know where you come up with that, but that stuck with him. He loved this whole concept of building better humans.
Mm.
Well, I started the podcast about 3 years later, and it just popped in my head and said, it's got to be the Building Better Humans project. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, so, definitely. And from what the research has shown and from your experiences as well, like literally a holistic approach to building a better human will have a long-term effect in terms of that person's like motivation to work with you and that person's like holistic experience of life, like their home life, their everything.
Yeah, even in our gym, on the front of our gym, it just says fitness, mindset, and adventure.
Mm.
It's not just about making you look better physically, because there are heaps of people that are physically fit, but the rest of their life is screwed up.
Mm.
So our idea is that the gym's called Project 180, Because the idea is that everyone that walks into that building has a project to work on, whether it's their mindset, whether it's their physical health, you know, whether it's something to do with their relationship. So everyone's got a project, and 180 is about taking them from where they are to where they want to be. From Everest Base Camp to the top of Everest, from one end of Kokoda to the other, from overweight to in shape, whatever. Everyone's got something they want to work on. I've never met any human, including myself, that is 100% happy in all areas of their life. Mm. At different points in our life, we've got something we want to work on. And our idea was to provide a place where that was accepted. So we run mindset seminars that are free to all of our members. We run them regularly. Seminars that companies pay me thousands of dollars for. Our members, for $45 a week, get access to. And they embrace it. And they love it. Yeah. So that's... And we're not going to be as big as all the chain gyms. We get that. We're not trying to be.
But you're offering something unique.
Yeah, we know who we are, and we love who we are, and we're confident in what we deliver. And you're hearing it. One thing I'm really big on is when anyone gives me advice is, who are you and what have you done? Like, I don't want to hear advice from people who've just read it in books. I want to know that they're having a go at life.
Not just regurgitating.
Yeah, if I go to a financial advisor, I don't want them to drive an old beaten up car, or I want them to, are you financially okay?
Yeah, that's it.
You know, like, I want to know that. I don't want to go to a doctor that's, you know, smoking and unhealthy and he tells me about my blood pressure.
Yes.
I don't want to go to a physical trainer that doesn't look like they particularly enjoy training themselves. Mm. And I'm not saying, like, I'm nearly 50. I'm not an athlete. I don't have a six pack. I'm interested in that. But for my age, or for any age, I'm pretty fit. I can do what I want when I want. I can train with my kids who are in their 20s. You know, they might beat me, but I can still train with them. I don't embarrass myself.
Yeah.
So it's just about having this holistic view of my own life. Because my one thing that I have in life is, I want to live the depth of it, not just the length of it. Everyone's trying to get to death as safely as possible. We're all going to die. Mm. That's not a spoiler. We all know that. Yeah. But we want to get there as safely as possible. We want to avoid all risk. And I just think at 60, 70, and 80, we're going to look back and go, what was that about? As opposed to actually going out and doing things. The oldest person I've taken to Kokoda was a 79-year-old woman. It took 9 months to get an insurance company to insure her because they decided she's just too old.
Yeah.
Like, they made the decision she's too old. They don't know anything about her.
Yeah.
But they just looked at her age. But having said that, I've taken, you know, a 50-year-old who said, you know, like, oh, I'm too old for this. Of course you're not. What are you talking about? Like, when I was working in nursing, I used to go into nursing homes where there were people who were in their 60s sitting around waiting to die. And you think, man, you could be here for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, just because you're unhealthy or you haven't looked after yourself doesn't mean that you die earlier. You might live a longer life.
Yeah.
But have you lived the depth of it?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
It's good that you have the foresight for that, because a lot of people kind of don't. And it's when you hear from those older people that are saying those things that you're like, oh, I should listen to this. But then people still take the safe
kind
of route. And that's just human nature, right? Everyone wants to be safe and secure kind of thing. But yeah, to push yourself and get outside your comfort zone, that's when you're actually going to find the magic, obviously.
Well, with us, there's a health industry. I've seen a lot of people unwell and sick. And then this whole tagline that we use, not dead yet, is, as a soldier, obviously I've got mates and people that I don't even know, but who are ex-military or in the military, who haven't made full lives. In the mountaineering industry that Alyssa's in, there are people that die. So our whole not dead yet theory is that we do what we do because we're not dead yet. So I'm not going to act like I'm dead now. I'm going to get out, have a crack, live my... I don't know. 2020, for me, I'm looking forward to as a phenomenal year. I don't know why. It has a nice vibe about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that out of all three of us, we don't know if we're all going to survive 2020. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to just assume I've got another 40 years left. What if I've only got 10? Well, I want to live them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've got 40, well, that's just going to be a bonus, because I'm going to be that old dude that everyone's calling crazy when I'm 70 and still doing this stuff.
Still crushing it, yeah.
Absolutely. I have no thought about retirement. I have no thought. People go, I've hired business coaches who go, all right, what's your exit strategy and how much would you sell that for? So I'm not trying to sell it, but what are you talking about? Yeah. I literally want to do this until the day I'm not able to walk up that mountain again. Yeah. That's I'm at now. Yeah. I could change.
And also the reality of, like, what you just said as well is, people could also live a safe life, quotation marks, and still die at any point, right? That's like, right. Anything could happen at any point in our lives. So, like, you might as well live your best life. You might as well try to improve yourself.
So how often do you hear about someone getting a cancer or having a tumor, and if they survive that incident, they go out and live a full life then? We almost need that scare to go, oh, hang on, that nearly happened. Or someone close to us gets sick and dies, and we go, wow, we need to go out and do more. It takes that for us to understand that there's actually a lot more we can do with our lives.
Mm.
I've had 40-year-olds tell me they're old, and you go, come on.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, you know. Yeah.
So it's been an action-packed episode, and we've probably got about a minute left. So
yeah, sorry, I don't talk a lot.
No, it's okay. We would have you here all day if we, talking about the episode length kind of thing. We would literally have a 4-hour episode with you. But a couple of quick-fire questions. How do you use video to benefit your business if you do?
I've got a really good videographer who's a young guy from Toowoomba who's used to own a gym himself, and he comes in and he does some gym filming. I haven't really used it in the adventure game yet, mostly because of the expense of flying people into another country and all that sort of stuff. But I've recently bought a little Osmo Pocket, so I can just capture some stuff myself. When I pull it out of my pocket, it survives so far New Guinea. I've taken it to New Guinea, Russia, and so on. But interestingly, I started doing live videos from Alaska about 2 years ago. I go to Alaska every year. And it was when live first became a thing. So I did some live videos from Alaska, and all these people said, I didn't know that you do this stuff. Huh. And I've been doing it for years. Now, all of a sudden, my Alaskan trips are booked out every year.
Really?
Because people are seeing it. That's amazing. Because they're seeing it while you're there doing it.
Yep.
It's 41 degrees in January in Brisbane, and I'm over there at minus 30 and they go in the snow. And they're going, this is amazing.
Just a little bit different.
Yeah. I think video is massively underrated.
Yeah.
But, it's an expensive side of a business too to get done. But I don't think you want to do it cheaply.
Yeah.
So my guy's not cheap, but he's really good at what he does.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Thank you. So the other thing is, if there's someone out there that's listened to this and they're a little bit inspired by it, they're a little bit confused about maybe what they want to be doing in their life, what the direction is that they want to do, is there any kind of one or two sentence answer that you would yell at that person to kind of get them to have a fulfilling life?
Oh, this is a really interesting one. So I think whenever I do talks, people go walk away and feel inspired. That's because I'm naturally inspired. So inspired people inspire people. And all I would say is they either walk away and do nothing with it because tomorrow's Monday and they just go back to normal life, or they'll walk away and do something. And my absolute urging of people is to say, if you took something out of anything I said, in the next 24 hours, take some form of action. But when it comes to understanding what your passion is, I think understand that you don't have to do your passion for a job necessarily. Everyone's getting stuck in this idea that I have to find my passion and go and do that to earn money. I think you can have a really good job and use that to finance what your true passion is. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So maybe just think outside the box of what your passion is. And if you don't know what your passion is, it just means that for whatever reason, it's been buried so deep, you need to spend some time uncovering it.
Nice.
And that means just spend some time thinking about, what do you talk about when there's no other conversation? What do you naturally gravitate to when you want to watch something or read something?
Mm.
There'll be a clue there about what your passion is.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on. It's been awesome. And we'd like to maybe join you on your podcast one day.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, boys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good stuff.